Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me. This is Hashtag No Limits, and I'm your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. I am excited today because I had opportunity to meet Holly in person a couple of weeks ago, and I am going to have her share with you this great platform that she is using now to help with writing. So welcome, Holly. How are you? What's been going on since we saw each other a few weeks ago?
Thank you. I'm doing well. Probably shouldn't mention that I was just in an auto accident, but since we met and saw each other and got a chance to talk, I've been through a lot. My husband and I are doing well, recovering from our bumps and bruises. It was scary, life learning, you know, one of those experiences you kind of tuck away, learn from, and are grateful to be alive.
Right. Of course. Yes. Oh gosh. I've only had a few fender benders in my lifetime, but just that has been scary. I hope I never have to experience something where my car is completely totaled or damaged more than a couple of dents and bruises.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I hope not for your sake too, or for any of us. One and done, right?
Hopefully. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So tell them who you are and kind of, you know, what I'm so excited about to bring to them today.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm actually excited too, to just be able to share about Squiggle Squad. This is the Squiggle Squad. This is all of my little critters. There's five of them. The long and short of it is that we promote handwriting, taught explicitly in classrooms. And the reason for even bringing it up and bringing it out to the public in a new way is because handwriting has been pushed metaphorically to, and sometimes literally, to the back table. And while a lot of schools still present a letter to their kids, oftentimes it's done as a do-it-yourself activity at a back table somewhere. The teacher goes to do other things that are important as well, you know, phonics, math, whatever. But the problem is that handwriting is not a do-it-yourself skill. It needs explicit instruction, direct instruction from the teacher or the parent who's helping the kiddo. So Squiggle Squad was designed to work on the child's motor skills. Those motor skills needed directly and to handwriting. So the Squiggle Squad, the reason for the cute little critters is that each one of them represents a stroke in the English alphabet, manuscript alphabet. I should clarify that when I speak handwriting, I'm not talking specifically about cursive. I'm talking about letter formation in print, and we're not talking about beautiful penmanship, though if you do this well, the idea is that you would have legible, efficient handwriting. But first and foremost, handwriting is a motor skill. So each of these critters represent a stroke in the English alphabet. And the kids practice these strokes in isolation in little booklets where they're doing activities completely decoupled from letter learning at first. And we go from gross motor skills, where the kids are actually getting those movements, those stroke movements, muscle movements in their bodies, then in some of their larger muscle groups, their shoulders and arms in particular, all the way down to their fingers, where they practice coordination and dexterity using a writing implement. So we funnel it down, because we start with kids really, really young these days. All of the public schools want the kids starting at 3 and 4 years old. And even though they're not completely ready to understand what letters are or what they signify, they are ready for their motor skills to get going. So that's what Squiggle Squad does. We start with those gross motor skills and move them toward handwriting and then eventually to letter learning.
What do you think has been the shift of, as you said, you know, kind of figuratively and almost literally in a lot of situations, to the back table. What is, because when I went to school, I absolutely remember learning about the letter people, and we had to practice our penmanship all the time. It was a daily activity. And I'm even remembering that in first and second grade, and even a little bit into third grade. I know I'm old, but why did we get away, do you think?
Well, there's probably a lot of answers to that question, but historically, we actually, way back, like 100 years ago, handwriting wasn't even emphasized or taught until about the age of six. And then from there, they went directly into cursive. You can get great histories. There's some really wonderful books out there about the history of handwriting. But cursive was, of course, the choice du jour long time ago, when, of course, we didn't have typewriters or computers, and legible, beautiful print was a sign of education, having been educated. Not only that, teachers were actually taught teacher training. They had completely separate training to teach teachers how writing. And that was because it wasn't just a kindergarten activity. It was carried through all of their school years. And now, to get right to your question, why the shift? I think there's been a few reasons why we might see the shift having happened. More recently, maybe most recently, was the release of the Common Core Standards in 2012, where the academic expectations of the kids were shifted way down to 4 and 5 year olds, mostly 5 year olds, if you consider kindergarten starts. And in those standards, while they do have writing requirements for what a learner should know leaving, those requirements are things like writing a sentence with at the beginning and a period at the end, but does not make any mention of teaching the skill of handwriting or letter formation in order to reach those goals of writing a full sentence. So because the teachers, in addition to higher academic expectations, were also more academic expectations were placed, it specifically in the of science and engineering. Yeah, they actually have engineering requirements in kindergarten. Because of that, teachers are short on time. There's just so much that you can fit in. And when those expectations are so high, teachers just jump right in. And, okay, if I have to know this, then, they have to jump in at those higher levels. And I think one of the time-saving devices has been to break those kids up into what they called centers or learning stations. And one of those learning stations will be getting where they can practice their letters while the teacher and the aides are working like phonics and math. Now, this is an overgeneralization that all public school classrooms obviously are doing it this way, but seeing across the nation as I'm visiting different areas and what I'm hearing from teachers is that is in fact what's happened. I've had several teachers come up to me at conferences and say they don't even have a curriculum in their kindergarten. Lots say that they have a workbook give to their students to work on. But it has posed a problem for teachers up the pipeline whose kids are coming up those grade levels without transcript skills.
You know, you said something to me that I knew, but I didn't really delve into and think about, because as a former teacher myself, Common Core Standards, I absolutely, knew what they were and had to write IEPs aligned to them. And absolutely what you said about, you need capital letter at the beginning and punctuation at the end and a subject and verb agreement. And I never caught on that it didn't say anything about the formation of the letters. And that's probably my aha moment for today, because that is so true. And I remember a few teachers, a couple of pre-K teachers, when the kids would get to kindergarten And the kindergarten teachers would say, you know, I can't read the child's handwriting, and I'm trying to teach them, you know, the proper way to make a certain letter. And they would go back to the pre-K teacher and say, why weren't you practicing the letter formations? And the pre-K teacher saying, well, because A, we're not supposed to focus on the formation. We're supposed to have more play-based instruction. And so we can't direct teach anyway. And, you know, we've kind of been told that as long as the letter looks kind of vaguely like it's supposed to, that the upper grades will take care of getting it more precise. So there was that, you know, oh, the next grade is going to take care of it. And then they got to kindergarten and, you know, that teacher was like, but I have all these other things to teach.
Right.
I don't necessarily have time to have an actual writing lesson and going back and correcting all these incorrect ways of writing things and lots of backwards writing and lots of starting from the bottom instead of going from the top. So how does this relate to like other subjects, like the science of reading? How does that correlate with what is involved with reading and those muscles and things?
Well, boy, that's a buzz phrase right now, science. Right. Let me back up a little bit to something you said about the pre-K being in charge of or responsible for getting kids writing their letters in the correct way. Kids do go through phases of development where they're actually biologically not able to do certain things. And then as they are able, they benefit from direct. So whereas a child might not understand that the letter E makes a sound that says B, they do have the ability to, I'm saying like 3 to 4 year olds, they do have the ability to make a straight line in the air. So maybe they can do a top to bottom using their hands, or they can follow a line with their nose, or they can do it with their finger. So while they may not be able to hold a pencil yet, we can still teach them top to bottom in their bodies. Fast forward to say 4 year olds, maybe second semester 4 year olds. Now they're holding a writing implement. Now they can start getting the coordination and dexterity needed to that line down, maybe make that counterclockwise circle. Again, Squiggle Squad does isolation so that they're practicing at their level, at their biological level, not their grade level, their brain level, where their brain and their body meet and coordinate and are able to do it. The problem, dare I say, with our time-honored traditions of allowing preschoolers to just basically scribble, do their own thing, start to understand that the print reading is the print that the teacher is saying or the parent is saying, all that stuff is starting to happen. And meanwhile, they're kind of scribbling on the paper, and then you give them a picture, a name, and they start to write it. Well, for a very, very, very long time, preschool teachers have encouraged capital letters first, with the argument that straight lines are easier to do, that bigger letters are easier to do. And in doing that, they have allowed them to write their names in capital letters, or actually to write their names in whatever mix of capital lowercase that they want. And then we as kindergarten teachers get these kids who have practiced it this way for 2 years, that every time that they do it, a parent or a teacher says, great job, you did it. Job, Ramon, we're so proud of you. And then we get up to kindergarten and we try to correct them. Like, my mom says it's just right, or
right,
my teacher told me it was that I was doing it good. And not only had they had the emotional reinforcement, but they've also had the memory just so ingrained in their little hands that, if you've ever tried to change, a child's writing, you know how difficult it is. So yes, now we do have kindergarten teachers that are, oh, as a matter of fact, Squiggle Squad started squarely in kindergarten. And it was the teachers who said, Holly, we need our preschoolers doing this. They come up to us being so backwards and upside down that it's really hard. And you think it's time consuming to teach the first time. It is way more time consuming to go back, correct the mistakes, and then, you know, redo it. So we did. We developed the pre-K program that is hopefully reinforcing the muscle memory that is correct to letter formation, so that teachers and anyone else up the pipeline won't have any problems with trying to help the legibility and whatnot. So did I get to what you're saying?
You did. How is writing connected to reading?
So this is sort of my soapbox. So I'm going to try not to get like overly bad about this, but I'm very, very concerned where neuroscience meets education and where the findings of neuroscience and other types of sciences meet the classroom. So, one of the things that has been found out over the last several years and is being pushed is the meta-analysis referred to as science of reading has focused a lot on the debate between phonics and whole language. Mm-hmm. So for a long time, maybe the last, I don't want to mess this up, but I would say minimum the last 10 years, probably closer to 20 years, there has been a push towards balanced or whole language instruction, which basically did away with the decoding using phonics. Big, long history of that. There's some really great stuff out there if you want to explore that. But the long and short of it is the science has pointed us back to a very, very strong need for decoding skills. So the need for teachers to explicitly teach the sounds of letters and multiple letters put together. So not to go too much in depth, but one of the very big pieces of this reading puzzle is alphabetic knowledge. And alphabetic knowledge starts super, super young when kids are being read to and they're seeing language in print. And it slowly evolves up to their understanding that the print that they're seeing actually carrying and that the print they're seeing is made up of letters. And we start way early by teaching them letter names of the English alphabet. That's a pretty concrete understanding. You see a letter of a B, you say the B, and they understand that, just like you would point to that bubble and say that is a bunny. They can see the bunny, they know it's a bunny, but they can't see a B and know it's. So before they gain that understanding, we're teaching them the letters of the alphabet. We're showing them practically what it looks like in, say, a book. They see the letters written, or maybe environment print, like on signs or, you know, things in their house or classroom or whatever. Okay, so there's that side. So my argument for the importance of handwriting as it relates to reading is that while you can see the letter and you can hear the letter, you can even say the letter, handwriting is a kinetic connection to the letter. And we all know that whether we write or we draw something, we learn it better. Used to, long time ago, we would go on field trips with my kids. And one of the things we do is we would sit where we were and we would sketch what we were learning. And that was by far one of the best ways to get that stuck in the memory, able for them to not only retain it, but retrieve it, because now they have that motion of actually making picture that has reinforced the memory that they have. So I think that language is very much that way. And with that kinesthetic connection, you can make not only the connection to the name, but as they get old and understand, they will quickly make that connection to the sound, which helps them not only writing it pretty, but actual spelling it as they're learning to read. It all kind of overlaps and layers on each other, but the motor skill of being able to write that letter is developmentally ready a lot earlier than some of those aspects of reading.
Awesome. Thank you. That was an excellent explanation. So we've talked about why we need Squiggle Squad, but we really haven't talked about Squiggle Squad. So, I mean, you've pointed out your characters and you've mentioned little bits, but go ahead and really tell about the whole program, kind of how it works. You know, I know you mentioned the workbooks, but just really give that, like you did me the day that I met you, like give me the whole sandwich.
Great. Okay. So the main goal of Squiggle Squad is to make writing easy and automatic. So we're going for automaticity so that when they get older, working memory is not all caught up in transcription. That's been made automatic. So now they can think about the higher levels of learning that they need to in order to really start to learn writing skills at a deeper level and reading skills at a deeper level. So we start broad. I mentioned before with the gross motor skills when they're very young. And this would include, and a little bit different than any program I've ever seen, with posters on the wall that have our little Squiggle Squad friends and the strokes, their favorite squiggles. That's what we say, is their stroke is their favorite squiggle. And they practice it with their bodies. So they might be drawing something, like they're drawing the scoops of ice cream on an ice cream cone, and they're making their clockwise circle of Bubbles the Bunny, for example. You have them do it with all kinds of ways, like with a finger, sure, in the air, but also with two hands, or with right hand, or with left hand. Or one of my ways to do it is to have them pretend they're putting their nose on the start spot, we call it, and the movement with their nose. Where your nose goes, your eyes go. We're trying to get eye-hand coordination, so we want them to be really tracing that movement with their eyes. So that's a way of getting them to do that. When we get them to go to the table, we do that same movement now down on. Now, before we ask them to write with a writing implement, we give you table mats. They have pictures, all kinds of ways that the kids can practice coordinating their arm while they trace with their finger. Once they're old enough, they can They can cut with scissors. They can do, you know, what smaller motor skill stuff. Then to hold a writing implement and control it as it relates to forming letters. And we, again, keep the letters separate strokes until they're showing some amount of skill and being able to do it. And we do that because we don't want to frustrate the kiddo. The more asks, the more frustrating it can be if the kiddo has a hard time with one or two of the requirements. And some kids, depending on their personalities or their tenacity or their willingness or lack of willingness to do it, become frustrated really fast. So if we take those layers off, then the kids are more likely to dive in. So we have, for the pre-Ks, we have the posters, we have the table, we have trace cards, so that if you're teaching in a group situation, pass the card around and everybody gets a turn to trace the letter. But by the time you get to the idea is that the kiddos play animals in isolation. Then when they're ready, the animals come together to play and form letters. Bubbles the Bunny plays with Lines the Lemur, and they make the lowercase a, for example. So by the time they're doing, the kiddos have already played with Bubbles. They know it's that counterclockwise movement, and they've already played with Lines or Dash the Duck. So they already know those movements. Now, when you put them together, those movements, because they're more automatic, they're not frustrated when they're asked to do more movements at once. So I hope that makes a little sense. The kindergarten group has a quick start guide that explains letter or the stroke booklets, the letter formation booklet, the number booklets, and those are all separate. So the kids play for with Lines the Lemur in their own little booklet, and inside the booklet are all kinds of motor skill practices. It goes from easy, starting finger, to more and more challenging. But again, because we the ask, anything on a page is still top to bottom, top to bottom. You might practice it with paper, you might practice it with a pencil, you might practice it inside what we call a pencil path, or you have to do it just with a start spot and do it all by yourself. We introduce the writing guidelines, but we don't ask for more that bottom to top. Once you practice, say, as I mentioned before, with Lines Lemur, Bubbles, then they come together and they make letters. So they get a booklet that is all likes. So for example, Lines the Lemur, this booklet is Lines and Bubbles. So all the letters in here are Lines and Bubbles. So they're practicing the lowercase letter A with bubbles and lines. They get some individual stroke practice, and then they get all the way down here where they have to do it with only a start spot. This is not only a great way for the kids to practice, it's an awesome way for teachers to do informal evaluations, observations, assessments as they go. You can use the resources of Squiggle Squad to differentiate for kids in the same class, in the lesson at the same time. Nobody has to be pulled out. Anybody that can just practice their level when the teachers get familiar with the resources to them.
That's awesome. So you've mentioned Lions the Lemur, Dash the Duck, Bubbles the Bunny. What are the other ones called?
Then we have Curves a Camel and Slide the Seal.
Slide the Seal. Okay. So Slide the Seal, like what are the strokes that you would use, or what letters would you use each of the strokes with?
So Slide the Seal, it plays with Lines the Lemur to make the letter K. And okay. Slide and Curve are special. They are one stroke, multiple directions. So it's a little bit of a, admittedly, but Curves a Camel makes a curve stroke in three directions. So you would have, for example, lowercase b is a curve. We call it out, back, out and back. And then he also is a curve swoop and up, which would be used for, say, the letter U. And then his third one is up and over, which would be for like the letter lowercase letter N. Slide the L is one stroke, two directions, slide down one way, slide down the other. And the kids don't seem to have a problem with that at all. And then every once in a while, slide is very silly. And she slides up, like for a V, a W. So we just say, silly slide. You can't go up a slide. Silly things like that.
That's fun. So what kind of progress have you seen in the kids that you have been implementing this with, and how long have you been implementing this?
We have been piloting for 2 years now in a couple of California schools and many, many homeschools. Favorite comments are coming from the classroom teachers that have repeated kids who have historically had a lot of trouble with even the desk doing anything with a writing implement, that are making leaps and bounds. A kindergarten teacher told me a couple months ago, this is now we're talking second semester of a kindergarten year. So they've gone, he special needs. I don't know his needs, but his parents and his teacher were watching him when she talked to me shortly thereafter, when he wrote thing, and they said that all of them were teary-eyed because of the progress that he make that was phenomenal, because of breaking down the expectations for him and allowing him to build them up at his speed and his ability. And interestingly enough, when you do break them down, they actually succeed faster than they have if you had just piled it all on at once and expected them to figure it out. So while it seems like, oh my gosh, I have to teach 26 letters of the alphabet and you want first teach all of the strokes, the truth is they're going to learn the letters of the alphabet much, much faster if you take the time to do the strokes. So we hear all kinds of wonderful things. It really makes me kind of teary-eyed. It actually makes me want to be back in the classroom really badly. I do get my fix once in a while. I get to go visit them. I'm watching them. I'm observing them, taking pictures of them. And I'm in pretty regular contact with the teachers that are used. So I'm really happy. We also get reports from the teacher of a little girl named Scarlett, who always wrote her cap backwards. And now she's learned Bubbles Bunny and Curves the Camel, which I know that's weird, but S Bubbles the Bunny because it's a counterclockwise. And then we call it a broken bubble. Oh, it's a broken bubble and then Curves the Camel. And now she's writing her S's without any problems. Those kinds of stories are great. Really, I just want the kids to feel so easy that they're not frustrated with writing. I don't want to hear I hate writing just because I really never taught the comfortable way to write.
Right. So all of yours from, and so I'm sort of summarizing to make sure that I have this correct. So yours is really about the production of the strokes, but not so much about how to hold the pencil or how to hold the writing instrument, or is that part of it as well?
That's part of it as well. Yeah. We are in action right now of quite a few training videos that do include that. There's a mention of it here on the back of the quick start guide where we talk about pencil grip, pencil posture, and posture and paper. The three for helping set up your writing environment. We call it set up for success. That's going to be one of our training videos that do help to sort of make the whole package comfortable for so that learning is, again, making it as possible for the kids to absorb it with very little restrictions or rules or whatever. We want to make it as natural as possible. So we're using everything at our disposal, from the writing environment to how they sit to how long we actually expect them to sit and get through the practice time. So all that does make the resources, of course, are for practicing the motor skills needs.
So I'm thinking that occupational therapists must love you and love this program. Because a lot of what I've seen in referrals to occupational therapists is for handwriting. Have you heard any kind of response from the occupational therapists?
Yeah, we are only making some inroads into OT. The occupational therapists that I have spoken with have said that very thing. Like I had one tell me, if they did this in the classroom, I would not be pulling as many kids because a lot of the kids that I pull out aren't having problems because they can't do it. They're having problems because they were never taught it. So that's on the way. For those OTs that need more tools, we've found that OTs have remarkable tools for hands and even coordination. They just need a supplemental curriculum marries what they're doing physically to the letters that they need to teach. So, we think that this is a wonderful marriage for OT.
Yeah, I can certainly see that it would be. I even myself as a former special education teacher, some of my students were referred because of handwriting.
Sure.
And it often was that I was, you know, trying to find now I'm back from the days because you weren't around then. So I was doing handwriting without tears because unfortunately a lot of my students were coming to me and they had been shedding tears in writing because it was so difficult. So, you know, that was one of the programs that I remember using. And they did some of that, if I'm recalling correctly, where things were broken down into the individual components. I don't know. Are you familiar with that program at all?
Only familiar. I haven't used it extensively, so I can't say that I know it in, I know that there's a lot of manipulatives. Mm-hmm. That's certainly something helpful. It's been my experience that even teachers use handwriting without tears or any other handwriting program don't always employ all of elements of the program. So right. You may not be getting even the full benefit of the program if you're not using it to its extent. But what I did with Squiggle Squad, what my hope was with Squiggle Squad, is I'm coming into a very full classroom with a very schedule, with a very, very spread thin teacher. That is the most efficient, effective way in the shortest amount of time, with the fewest amount of expectations on the teacher can possibly get, so that A, you'll give me a chance in your classroom and we're at that this works, and B, you enjoy it when you use it. So it's not so overwhelming, give up and you know, not get the benefits of the design.
Yeah. And that's really, I'm so glad that you brought that into the conversation, because that was the thing I think that drew me and had me so excited about talking to you and having you on today, is because exactly of all that. Our teachers have, and we talked about it earlier, you know, that the Common Core standards have just been younger and younger and younger are required to do more and more things. And so that means that our younger grade teachers are required to teach more things. And they just don't have a lot of the time to get into all of these things. And the fact that this was so simple or simplified, I don't know that simple sounds, I don't know, simplified, I think, is a little bit of a better term.
Yeah.
And that it is so much more efficient that it's, you know, just do this. So speaking about the efficiency of it, and you mentioned, you know, that even breaking down all the components, it does go faster than trying to teach the whole concept of letters all at once. What sort of time frame do you suggest to your teachers that they work through this whole program?
If I were in the classroom and I were implementing it, we have I put basically the fastest way and most effective way in that. If you go too fast, it's not going to be effective. You're going to run over all the kids. If you go too slow, you're not going to get the kids the tools they need to do all the other things in your class that you need them to be writing for. So we have a recommended rollout in that guide that includes starting with the first two strokes and then interweaving that the booklet that includes those first two strokes. So the first two strokes are lines and bubbles, so that you're starting with A, C, D, G, some of the more the hard consonants and a couple vowels. You've got O in there too. So now you can relate that to your reading. And they're practicing strokes and letters. What it works out to be is about a stroke. So 1 week a stroke. So that's 5 days. What I'm finding is that a lot of teachers don't do practicing of handwriting every day. If you're doing handwriting every day and you really get dedicated that time every day, you might get it out faster. But you want it to be fun. You want it to be age appropriate. We're talking about, you know, brand new 4-year-olds or 5-year-olds to a classroom that's still learning a whole lot of things like behavior and all that. So your expectation for them to sit for a given length is limited. So I would say about a week a stroke, slide the seal and curves the camel is going to take a little bit longer because they have that direction that the others don't have. So 6 weeks total for the stroke. You can get all the letters in by Christmas vacation. That would be lowercase letters A through Z. We call the capital letters special letters because you use them for a special reason. And I really advocate doing this first because that's how you're teaching them to read by that. I haven't found a great stat on this, but I've heard anywhere from 88 to 90% of all letters they see in their reading time are going to be lowercase. So if you want to marry what you're teaching in visual alphabet practices and audible alphabet practices, I think it's a great way to go. So yeah, I would say inside of the semester, you should have the full alphabet. And numbers 0 through 9.
Wow, that's awesome. I know there's a lot of times it's a letter a week, and then a color a week or something like that. So that time frame. And then how many minutes per day? I know you said there's not necessarily a dedicated time in a lot of classrooms, but what do you recommend for this program?
That one's a little bit harder because classrooms and tutoring thing that everybody takes has sort of sets it up differently. So if you're doing large group instruction versus small group instruction, I recommend if I were the one in the classroom, I would do stroke practice my morning meeting where we came together and we talked about what the day was going to look like. And we sang our little song. We had our fun time and maybe our little puppets. I would also have them do the strokes that I learned the day they're going to be using to practice their handwriting. So we would play with lines, the lemur with our bodies, hands, or we would play. There's a happy day poster for kindergarten where you can play with all of one poster. Might bring that out later after they've learned it all. If you count that, that would be like a few minutes there and then a few minutes at a table. I would say if not counting the time it takes to get them to the table and get their things out and get their in their hand, I would say a solid 10 minutes of them getting to play in their books. We call them play sheets, not worksheets, because there's a lot of different activities that help. They do tend to like it a lot. They think it's like, oh, we get to play with the squiggle. So that's kind of fun. So, I've seen people say, oh, I only have 10 minutes a day. I mean, they're doing 20 minute, work, whatever. But I would say a solid 10 minutes with their pencil in their hand, practicing their booklets, then I think that would suffice. Then, and this is no small thing, the things you teach in Squiggle Squad, in that handwriting, must be reinforced across the subjects. Because if you only do it in 10 and then the rest of the day, you require them to write, but you're not watching how, what are they really reinforcing? The bad habits and not the new habits of Squiggle Squads. Yeah,
that's such a great point. So I do want to make sure to share your website address before we get too much further into this. And it is squigglesquad.com. And it's squigglesquad.com, squigglesquad.com. So I know when I met you, you had a beautiful young lady with you. And according to the card, you're both co-founders. You want to talk a little bit about who I'm referring to?
Yes, you're to my amazingly talented and beautiful daughter, Ellie Britton. She is a designer and has just been everything to a partner to me in this company. She is business side of things in marketing and sales, but is the main designer for our company.
Yeah.
I really want... I could talk about Ellie all day, but I don't want to mention my production, who has been with us since the very beginning, and his name is Josh, and he works for us out of Fresno, and incredible young man. I don't even know how Josh, how old are you? I don't know, but anyway, he instrumental in the building up of Squiggle Squad.
That's awesome. And so tell the audience where they can find you. I mean, I mentioned your website, but where else are you?
Yeah, you know, the social media side of things. So you can find us on Facebook and Instagram, Squiggle Squad Handwriting, I think it is, Squiggle Squad Handwriting. And you can see more about me, Ellie, and Josh at the Squiggle Squad LinkedIn page.
Awesome. Awesome. So, Holly, before we let you go, I always ask my guests, you know, is there anything else that we haven't spoken about that you thought you were going to talk about today or that you absolutely wanted to say or that in the course of the conversation you went, oh, I don't want to forget to say this?
I'm glad you said something because that's always, but no, you've done a great job asking the questions. I think I've gotten out everything that I need and I just want to encourage anybody who's listening to contact us personally. We're still small, so if you contact us, you'll get me personally. So I hope to talk to anybody who's out there interested, whether you're a classroom teacher or a homeschool parent or OT. Certainly, if you are in research as it relates to neuroscience and classroom instruction, I would sure to speak with you.
Awesome. And there was some, how do they get a hold of you? So is it just like Holly at, I know I have your email, but I can't think of what it is right now.
Yeah. Holly at squigglesquad.com.
Okay.
Yep. Any contact form you fill out on the website will come directly to me.
Okay. And Holly is Holly at squigglesquad.com. All right. Well, Holly, thank you so much. It's been such a joy to get to know you even a little bit more than I did a few weeks ago at the conference. And I wish you all the best. And I can't wait to see how this just continues to grow and expand and just enhances everybody's writing abilities.
Thank you so much, Shelley. It was a pleasure to meet you too. Thanks for what you're doing with Hashtag No Limits.
Oh, absolutely. Next week, guys, I will have... Sweet Abilities. John and Kristen will be with me to talk about these amazing treats that they provide to in a food truck style. So join me next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelley Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelley Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelley Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shelleykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shelleykino.com, SHELLEYKENOW.